Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists about baseball books, music, film, pretty much anything you can fit on a bookshelf. And that's the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. In our last podcast, I spoke with Jason Kendall, the former Major League veteran and co-author of the new book, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game Is Really Played. This week, we have his collaborator, Lee Judge, who blogs about the Royals for the Kansas City Star, but is perhaps more widely recognized as the newspaper's award-winning political cartoonist. Judge's artwork has appeared in hundreds of newspapers and magazines, including the New York Times, Washington Post, Chicago Sun-Times, and National Review, among others. His cartoons have also been featured on Good Morning America, the McNeiler NewsHour, and C-SPAN, and he has been a guest lecturer at numerous schools and colleges. But baseball has always been a passion, and Judge and his partnership with Kendall has produced a wonderful analysis of the game that is a must-read for anyone interested in the way pro players' minds work or should work. Lee Judge, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Thank you very much.
So I was talking with Jason Kendall yesterday, getting his side of the story, and this is a fascinating book. It's an in-depth look about what goes on in the minds of ball players, or what should go on in the mind of ball players. Tell me how this project came about.
Well, I started covering the Kansas City Royals in 2010, and I played some amateur ball. And so I had a little bit of insight into the game, and I was trying to cover the game from the ballplayer's point of view. I wanted to know why they did the things they did. And Jason found that fascinating. He said it just wasn't the usual approach for the media. And once he realized what I was trying to do, to explain why things happened the way they were happening, he was all in. And then at one point he said, you ought to write a book. And I said, no, we ought to write a book. And then things just kind of happened from there.
So how was he to work with? I mean, what was, let's step back a bit. What was the process? How did you do this work?
Well, first you get a case of Bud Light, and you sit down and try to keep up with him. The book changed as we were going along. After a while, because we were kind of butting heads about what the book was going to be, and you know, I had this moment where I thought, what am I doing? Why am I arguing with this guy, you know, who's played Major League Baseball? And once I got my mind around it and said, look, the book is yours. The book's going to be whatever you want it to be about. Then it took off. And essentially what we did, we ran a digital recorder. We'd, you know, crack open a beer, and I'd ask him questions, and he'd answer them. All I really did was organize his thoughts.
So going position by position, I mean, he's a catcher. His dad, Fred Kendall, was a catcher. So he has, with all due respect, a catcher's mentality. You know, he's in charge.
Right.
So did you get that sense when you were working with him?
I get that sense when we go to Taco Bell. Yeah. He's very much an in-charge guy, and actually that worked out great, because if we'd done the book I wanted to do, it wouldn't have been nearly as good.
What did you want to do that was different? How did you do it originally?
To me, I wanted to write everything I'd been learning on the baseball field from all kinds of different people about how to watch a game and how to understand what was going on. And, you know, I'd bring up someone's name, and he'd go, well, why would you talk to him? And I'd go, well, he's a major leaguer. And Jason would say, not for long. You know, so to him, if you haven't been in the big leagues 10 years, you know, you probably don't have a great idea of what's going on. And kind of once I let go of that idea and said, okay, I'm going to quit arguing with you about what it's like out there, and I want you to tell me what it's like out there. That's when the book really took off.
One of the things we discussed is that reading this book and putting what you've read into practice for the reader, you really have to be at the game, because television doesn't afford you the kind of angles you would need to watch a shortstop in between pitches, to watch an outfielder, to see how exactly the first baseman sets up, because the basic focus of TV is pitcher and catcher until something happens.
Absolutely. If you watch on TV, there are certain things you can see better than when you're at the park. And I watch all the road games on TV, and at that point I do focus on pitcher-catcher. And you can see a lot You can see how much does a catcher's glove move when he receives a pitch. You can see the signs. Is the pitcher shaking him off a lot? So you see certain things depending on whether you're at the game or whether you're watching it on TV. But yeah, for me, I prefer being at the game because then you get to choose what you're looking at.
The only problem with being at the game is you don't have the benefit of replay, unless they put it up on the Jumbotron or whatever. But one thing Jason and I discussed was the video challenge system and how, as much as you get on umpires for getting it wrong when they have to overturn a ruling, they don't have the benefit of replay when they're making those calls.
Right, and sometimes it's very hard to tell exactly what has happened without watching a replay several times. And I'll do the same thing because sometimes I have a question about what a player did or how were his feet set up around the base or what was actually going on at the moment. And sometimes I'll have to watch it several times if I've got it on DVR. Now, when we're sitting in the press box, they do have TV monitors, and we see what they see on TV. But there are times, you know, something happens and all of us in the press turn up and look at the TV. We really need to see this replay, and sometimes they don't show it, and that can be frustrating.
Now, when you're working on the book, how long did this take start to finish?
Oh, really, probably almost a couple of years.
Really?
Yeah, the main writing was done over a winter, but, you know, from the time we first started talking about it and hanging out a little bit, and kind of feeling each other out to the time we were actually finished sending it in, maybe a year and a half. I should probably be a faster writer than that, but I think, you know, when you start a book, like I said, you have an idea of what it's going to be, and it starts to focus and change and kind of narrow down. And it was very much a learning process for me. It was my first book.
This is a chicken and egg question. Did you have the book and then sought out a publisher, or you sent out a proposal and the publishers came to you?
We were very lucky in that regard. Jason's sports agent kind of steered us to a literary agent, and he asked to see kind of a draft of what we were talking about. And so we worked up one chapter. We did a chapter on the pitcher, and we sent that in to him. And at that point, he liked the idea, and he thought there were changes that needed to be made to sell the book. And I ended up rewriting that chapter 18 times.
Wow.
And it's like, that's the process. I was kind of like, am I going to have to write every chapter 18 times? I don't think I can make it. But it was a learning process to do the chapter the way they wanted it done. The other chapters, once I understood, okay, this is how to work, everything else came quite a bit easier.
If you can tell me why, what was it that they were so persnickety about that you had to make so many changes?
I think the use of the word persnickety there is pretty good. I think, you know, it's selling a book is kind of funny because it's like, hey, you know, we got to make this pitch, and that's what they call it, perfect. It's just got to be perfect because we're going to send it out, and we get one shot at them buying this book. And if, you know, if there's anything wrong with it, they're not going to let you come back in a couple weeks and say, oh, I fixed that. You know, would you take another look at it? It's like, you know, you have very little time with your book on a publisher's desk, and it better be right when they give it to you. Now, having done a book, it's a little easier to do another one because you've got some kind of track record. But, yeah, it was very much just polishing, 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 you know, just little phrases, punctuation. Turns out I'm a horrible typist and made a lot of typos. That was good for me. I mean, to have it be that hard was very much a learning experience, and it was very good for me as a writer.
So the changes that were requested came from the literary agent or the publisher?
The literary agent, okay. For the most part. Uh-huh. He was very adamant, and rightly so, that, you know, this be right when we send it out. And it was funny because that period went on a long time, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm never going to make it through a book. And we put the book out for bid, and by that afternoon had sold it. So at that point, I felt like, wow, the agent made every penny he deserves, everything he got, you know, because he was right.
He did a great job because so many of the things that come across nowadays, especially in the age of self-publishing, you know, it looks like no one ever looks at it except the writer, which can be a horrible thing. What about the title? Whose idea was that?
Oh, man, the title was a problem. We went all over the place trying to figure out titles and using words, and Jason would strongly object to just about everything. He would like a title for a little while, and then he wouldn't like the title. And, you know, at some point we were just going through words, and we hit the word throwback, and I kind of liked it for a number of reasons, you know, just the actual physical act of throwing the ball back, which a catcher does all the time, but I thought it really fit Jason. His attitudes and the way he thinks about baseball come from his dad. So his attitude comes from guys who went through the strikes, who had to have off-season construction jobs. So he's really a throwback. I mean, he's a you don't go into the training room and admit you're hurt guy. You know, he's a you listen to the veterans, and if they ask for a cup of coffee, you jump. You know, he's from his attitudes and the way he thinks about the game are from that generation.
Now, I asked him if he had a problem with some of the newer players that come along that don't seem to have that respect for the game, that maybe they come from a culture where they don't do this kind of thing, and, you know, don't tell me to bring you a cup of coffee, and don't tell me to carry the backpack full of candy or dress up funny for the road trips or things like that.
Yeah, actually he does. I don't know what he said to you, but yeah, he does. I think
he kept it clean, which is
yeah.
More than I can
well, that was an accomplishment. I think the newer guys, you know, and part of it has to do with these signing bonuses. I mean, you know, you give a kid $7 million, he hadn't played in, you know, he hasn't seen a pitch in the big leagues. And you know, they don't expect to be treated that way, and they've always been kind of pampered. And they get to the big leagues, and they expect that to keep happening. Well, Jason, he told me a hilarious story. He made the mistake of getting on an airplane before a veteran, so they took all his meal money, which was $700, and locked him in the plane bathroom for the flight. And then they sat and gambled with his money. And, you know, he said, I was claustrophobic. So I was in there having the shakes and doing all kinds of stuff. And it was just, you know, it was a different era. But I think there was something to be learned from that, because if you had a veteran come over and say, hey, you know, you got to run those ground balls out, or, you know, you can't be doing what you're just doing there. And, you know, I think the kids took them real seriously. I don't know that it's that way anymore.
Now, you've been covering the Royals for a few years. You have a blog about the team. But this isn't your primary function at the Kansas City Star, is it?
No, it's becoming so. But, yeah, I originally started as a political cartoonist, and I did that I've been doing that since 1981. I'm still doing it every day.
So how do you – that's kind of an odd
– combination? Yeah. It started because my wife sent me to a fantasy camp in 1990, and I just fell in love with it, and I got to know Clint Hurdle real well. And I decided, you know, here was a sport that I thought I knew, and I realized I didn't know anything about it. When you start talking to these guys on the level they play the game, I was pretty ignorant about, you know, my chosen, you know, sport. And I started playing in a men's senior league. I started managing. I was learning as much as I could from Clint, and I knew George Brett and some people like that. And in 2010, when the Star decided they wanted to do something online about the Royals, I got offered the job of covering them because the editor here, Mike Fannin, knew of my interest in baseball. And the reason I said yes, besides the money, was I wanted to cover the game from the ballplayer's point of view, because we don't really write about the game that way. We take kind of a view from 20,000 feet, and we talk an awful lot about the results. And I wanted to take the view from down in the trenches and talk about the process. You know, how are they doing the things we see them doing every day?
Well, that obviously lends itself to a book. It would be difficult to put that in paper with the shrinking real estate and all the other problems that are in the industry these days.
And in fact, we do have to kind of focus on the results in the newspaper. There's no time, you know, someone hits a home run. Like last night, Mike Moustakas hit a big home run. Well, one of the reasons he hit a home run is there was a runner on first, and the pitcher had to alter his delivery, and that made the ball stay up in the zone. And, you know, we just don't have time to describe all that in the newspaper. But on my website, I can go into that. I can explain how that changed that pitcher's delivery and why that allowed Mike Moustakas to hit a home run.
Well, this is a fascinating book, and we've been talking with Lee Judge, who wrote with Jason Kendall, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game is Really Played. Lee, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that was our bookshelf conversation with Lee Judge. Next week, our guest will be Jonah Carey, author of the new Expos History, Up, Up, and Away. That has a special meaning for me since my family's from Montreal, and it holds a lot of nostalgia for me, and I hope it'll be entertaining for you as well. Don't forget to visit Ron Cadlin's baseball bookshelf regularly for the latest news on baseball books, and leave a comment, and you might win the book of the week. So thanks for listening, everybody, and see you again next time.